disturb sign off the door. Better if they found me first thing. I didn't want them to find me from the smell. It felt like a lifetime had come and gone since my night with Pippa, and I thought how happy I'd been, rushing to meet her in the sharp-edged winter darkness, my elation at spotting her under a street lamp out in front of Film Forum, and how I'd stood on the corner to savor it, the joy of watching her watch for me, her expectant watching the crowd face, me she was watching for, me, and the heart shock of believing for only a moment that you might just have what could never be yours. Suit from the closet, shirts all dirty. Why hadn't I thought to send one out? My shoes were waterlogged and wrecked, which added a final sorry note to the picture. But no, pausing muddled in the middle of the room, was I going to lay myself out fully dressed, shoes and all, like a corpse on a slab? I'd broken out in a cold sweat, shivers and chills again, the whole routine. I needed to sit down. Maybe I was going to have to rethink the whole presentation, tear up the letters, make it look like an accident. Much nicer if it looked like I was on my way to some mysterious dress-up party, just having a bump on the way out. Sitting on the edge of the bed, little too much. Black sparklers and fizz pops, keeling over deliciously. Whoops. White wings of tumult, running jump into the infinite. Then, at a blare of trumpets, I started. The liturgical chant had given way to a burst of inappropriately festive orchestration. Melodic, brassy. A wave of frustration boiled up in me. Nutcracker sweet. All wrong, all wrong. A full-blooded seasonal extravaganza wasn't at all the note to go out on. Dashing orchestral number, march of the something-something. And all at once my stomach heaved, violent pitch right into my throat. It felt like I'd swallowed a quart of lemon juice, and the next thing I knew, almost before I could lurch for the wastebasket, it was all coming up in a clear, acid gush, wave after wave after yellowy wave. After it was over, I sat on the carpet with my forehead resting on the sharp metal edge of the can and the kiddie ballet music sparkling along irritatingly in the background. Not even drunk. That was the hell of it. Just sick. In the hallway, I could hear a gaggle of Americans, couples laughing, saying their loud goodbyes as they parted for their respective rooms. Old college friends, jobs in the financial sector, 5+ years of corporate law, and Fiona entering first grade in the fall. All's well in Oaklandia. Well, good night then. God, we love you guys. A life I might have had myself, except I didn't want it. That was the last thing I remember thinking before I made it swaying to my feet and switched the annoying music off and, stomach roiling, threw myself face down on the bed like throwing myself off a bridge, every lamp in the room still blazing as I sank away from the light, blackness closing over my head. 4. When I was a boy, after my mother died, I always tried hard to hold her in my mind as I was falling asleep, so maybe I'd dream of her. Only I never did. Or, rather, I dreamt of her constantly, only as absence, not presence. A breeze blowing through a just-vacated house, her handwriting on a notepad, the smell of her perfume, streets in strange, lost towns where I knew she'd been walking only a moment before, but had just vanished, a shadow moving away against a sun-struck wall. Sometimes I spotted her in a crowd, or in a taxi cab pulling away, and these glimpses I treasured despite the fact that I was never able to catch up with her. Always, ultimately, she eluded me. I'd always just missed her call, or misplaced her phone number, or run up breathless and gasping to the place where she was supposed to be, only to find her gone. In adult life, these chronic near misses pulsed with a messier and much more painful anxiety. I would be stricken with panic to learn or remember or be told by some implausible party that she was living across town in some terrible slum apartment where, for reasons inexplicable, I had not gone to see her or contacted her in years. Usually I was frantically trying to hail a cab or make my way to her when I woke up. These insistent scenarios had a repetitive and borderline brutal quality that reminded me of the wound-up Wall Street husband of one of Hobie's clients, who, when he got in a certain mood, liked to tell the same three stories of his Vietnam War experience over and over, with the same mechanical wording and gestures, same rat-a-tat of gunfire, same chopping hand, always in the exact same spot. Everyone's face got very still over the after-dinner drinks when he spieled off into his routine, which we'd all seen a million times and which, like my own ruthless loop of searching for my mother, night after night, year after year, dream after dream, was rigid and invariable. He was always going to stumble and fall over the same tree root. He would never make it to his friend Gage in time, just as I would never manage to find my mother. But that night, finally, I did find her. Or more accurately, she found me. It felt like a one-off, although maybe some other night, some other dream, she'll come to me like that again. Maybe when I'm dying, though it seems almost too much to wish for. Certainly I would be less frightened of death. Not just my own death, but Welty's death, Andy's death, death in general, if I thought a familiar person came to meet us at the door. Because, writing this now, I'm close to tears. I think how poor Andy told me, with terror on his face, that my mother was the only person he'd known and liked who'd ever died. So, maybe when Andy washed up spitting and coughing into the country on the far side of the water, maybe my mother was the very one who knelt down by his side to greet him on the foreign shore. Maybe it's stupid to even articulate such hopes. But then again, maybe it's more stupid not to. Either way, one off or not, it was a gift. And if she had only one visit, if that's all they allowed her, she saved it for when it mattered. Because all of a sudden, there she was. I was standing in front of a mirror and looking at the room reflected behind me, which was an interior much like Hobie's shop, or rather, a more spacious and eternal-seeming version of the shop. Cello brown walls and an open window which was like an entry point into some much larger, unimaginable theater of sunlight. The space behind me in the frame was not so much a space in the conventional sense as a perfectly composed harmony, a wider, more real-seeing reality with a deep silence around it, beyond sound and speech, where all was stillness and clarity, and at the same time, as in a backward-run movie, you could also imagine spilled milk leaping back into the pitcher, a jumping cat flying backward to land silently upon a table. A way station where time didn't exist, or more accurately, existed all at once in every direction, all histories and movements occurring simultaneously. And when I looked away for a second and then looked back, I saw her reflection behind me, in the mirror. I was speechless. Somehow I knew I wasn't allowed to turn around. It was against the rules, whatever the rules of the place were, but we could see each other. Our eyes could meet in the mirror, and she was just as glad to see me as I was to see her. She was herself, an embodied presence. There was psychic reality to her. There was depth and information. She was between me and whatever place she had stepped from, what landscape beyond. And it was all about the moment when our eyes touched in the glass, surprise and amusement. Her beautiful blue eyes with the dark rings around the irises. Pale blue eyes with a lot of light in them. Hello. Fondness, intelligence, sadness, humor. There was motion and stillness, stillness and modulation, and all the charge and magic of a great painting. 10 seconds. Eternity. It was all a circle back to her. You could grasp it in an instant. You could live in it forever. She only existed in the mirror, inside the space of the frame. And though she wasn't alive, not exactly, she wasn't dead either because she wasn't yet born, and yet never not born, as somehow, oddly, neither was I. And I knew that she could tell me anything I wanted to know. Life, death, past, future, even though it was already there, in her smile, the answer to all questions, the before Christmas smile of someone with a secret too wonderful to let slip just yet. Well, you'll just have to wait and see, won't you? But just as she was about to speak, drawing an affectionate, exasperated breath I knew very well, the sound of which I can hear even now, I woke up. 5. When I opened my eyes, it was morning. All the lamps in the room were still blazing, and I was under the covers with no memory of how I'd got under them. Everything was still bathed and saturated with her presence, higher, wider, deeper than life, a shift in optics that had produced a rainbow edge. And I remember thinking that this must be how people felt after visions of saints. Not that my mother was a saint, only that her appearance had been as distinct and startling as a flame leaping up in a dark room. Still half sleeping, I drifted in the bedclothes, buoyed by the sweetness of the dream washing quietly about me. Even the ambient morning sounds in the hallway had taken on the atmosphere and color of her presence, for if I listened hard, in my half-dreaming state, it seemed that I could hear the specific, light, cheerful sound of her footsteps, mixed up with the clank of the room service trays up and down the hall, and the rattle of elevator cables, the opening and closing of elevator doors, a very urban sound, a sound I associated with Sutton Place, and her. Then, suddenly, bursting into the last wisps of bioluminescence still trailing from the dream, the bells of the nearby church broke out in such violent clangor that I bolted upright in a panic, fumbling for my glasses. I had forgotten what day it was. Christmas. Unsteadily, I got up and went to the window. Bells, bells. The streets were white and deserted. Frost glittered on tiled rooftops. Outside, on the Heerenracht, snow danced and flew. A flock of black birds was cawing and swooping over the canal. The sky was hectic with them, great sideways sweeps and undulations as a single intelligent body, eddying to and fro, and their movement seemed to pass into me on almost a cellular level, white sky and whirling snow, and the fierce, gusting wind of poets. First rule of restorations: never do what you can't undo. I took a shower, shaved and dressed. Then quietly, I cleared up and packed my things. Somehow I would have to get Gyuri's ring and watch back to him, assuming he was still alive, which I was increasingly doubtful he was. The watch alone was a fortune. A BMW 7 Series, a down payment on a condo. I would FedEx them to Hobie for safekeeping and leave his name for Gyuri at the front desk, just in case. Frosted panes, snow ghosting the cobblestones, deep and speechless. No traffic on the streets. Centuries superimposed. 1940s by way of 1640s. It was important not to think too deeply. The important thing was to ride the energy of the dream that had followed me into waking. Since I didn't speak Dutch, I would go to the American consulate and have the consulate phone the Dutch police, spoiling some consulate member's Christmas, the festive family meal. But I didn't trust myself to wait. Possibly a good idea to go down and look at the State Department's website and apprise myself of my rights as an American citizen. Certainly there were many worse places in the world to be in jail than the Netherlands, and maybe if I was upfront about everything I knew, Horst and Sasha, Martin and Fritz, Frankfurt and Amsterdam, they could run the painting down. But who knew how it would play? I was certain of nothing except that evasive action was over. Whatever happened, I would not be like my father, dodging and scheming up until the very moment of flipping the car and crashing in flames. I would stand forward and take what was coming to me. And to that point, I went straight to the bathroom and flushed the glassine envelope down the toilet. And that was that. Fast as Martin, and just as irrevocable. What was it my dad had liked to say? Face the music. Not something he'd ever done. I had been to every corner of the room, done all there was to do except for the letters. Even the handwriting made me wince. But the consciousness made me start back. I did have to write Hobie. Not the self-pitying wobbles of drunkenness, but a few business-like lines. Whereabouts of checkbook, ledger, deposit box key. Probably just as well if I admitted in writing the furniture fraud and made it crystal clear he'd had no knowledge of it. Maybe I could have it witnessed and notarized at the American consulate. Maybe Holly, or whoever, would take pity and call someone in to do it before they phone the police. Grisha could back me up on a lot of it without incriminating himself. We'd never discussed it. He'd never questioned me. But he'd known it wasn't kosher, all those hush-hush trips out to the storage unit. That left Pippa and Mrs. Barber. God, the letters I'd written Pippa and never sent. My best effort, my most creative, after the disastrous visit with Everett, had begun and ended with what I felt was the light, affecting line, leaving for a while. As a would-be suicide note, it had seemed at the time, in terms of concision anyway, a minor masterpiece. Unfortunately, I'd miscalculated the dose and awakened 12 hours later with vomit all over the bedspread and had to stagger downstairs still sick as a dog for a 10 a.m. meeting with the IRS. That said, a going-to-jail note was different and best left unwritten. Pippa wasn't fooled by who I was. I had nothing to offer her. I was illness, instability, everything she wanted to get away from. Jail would only confirm what she knew. The best thing I could do was break off contact. If my father had really loved my mother, really loved her the way he said he had once upon a time, wouldn't he have done the same? And then, Mrs. Barber. It was sinking ship knowledge, the sort of extremely surprising thing you don't realize about yourself until the absolute last ditch, until the lifeboats are lowered and the ship is in flames. But, in the end, when I thought of killing myself, she was the one I really couldn't bear to do it to. Leaving the room, going down to inquire about FedEx and to look at the State Department's website before I called the consulate, I stopped. Tiny, ribbon-wrapped bag of candies over the doorknob, a handwritten note, Merry Christmas. Somewhere people were laughing and a delicious smell of strong coffee and burnt sugar and freshly baked bread from room service was floating up and down the hall. Every morning I'd been ordering up the hotel breakfasts, grimly plowing through them. Wasn't Holland meant to be famous for its coffee? Yet I'd been drinking it every day, and not even tasting it. I slipped the bag of candy in the pocket of my suit, and stood in the hallway, breathing deep. Even condemned men were allowed to choose a last meal, a topic of discussion which Hobie, indefatigable cook, joyous eater, had more than once introduced at the end of the evening over Armagnac while he was scrambling around for empty snuff boxes and extra saucers to serve as impromptu ashtrays for his guests. For him, it was a metaphysical question, best considered on a full stomach after all the desserts were cleared and the final plate of jasmine caramels was being passed, because, really looking at the end of it, at the end of the night, closing your eyes and waving goodbye to Earth, what would you actually choose? Some comforting reminder of the past? Plain chicken dinner from some lost Sunday in boyhood? Or last grasp at luxury, the far end of the horizon? Pheasant and cloudberries, white truffles from Alba? As for me, I hadn't even known I was hungry until I'd stepped into the hallway. But at that moment, standing there with a rough stomach and a bad taste in my mouth, and the prospect of what would be my last freely chosen meal, it seemed to me that I'd never smelled anything quite so delicious as the sugary warmth in the hallway. Coffee and cinnamon. Plain buttered rolls from the continental breakfast. Funny, I thought, closing the door and heading back into the room and picking up the room service menu. To want something so easy. To feel such appetite for appetite itself.
Frohlich, Kirstfest, said the kitchen boy half an hour later, a stout, disheveled teenager, straight from Jan Steen, with a wreath of tinsel on his head and a sprig of holly behind one ear, lifting the silver tops of the trays with a flourish.
Special Dutch Christmas bread, he said, pointing it out ironically. Just for today.
I'd ordered the festive champagne breakfast, which included a split of champagne, truffled eggs and caviar, a fruit salad, a plate of smoked salmon, a slab of pâté,
and half a dozen dishes of sauce, cornichons, capers, condiments, and pickled onions. He had popped the champagne and left, after I'd tipped him with most of my remaining euros, and I'd just poured myself some coffee and was tasting it carefully, wondering if I could stomach it. I was still queasy and it smelled not quite so delicious up close, when the telephone rang. It was the desk clerk.
"Merry Christmas, Mr. Decker," he said rapidly. "I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you've got someone on the way up. We tried to stop them at the desk."
"What?" Frozen, cup halfway to mouth.
"On the way up. Now. I tried to stop them. I asked them to wait, but they wouldn't. That is, my colleague asked him to wait. He started up before I could telephone."
Looking around the room, all my resolve gone in an instant.
"My colleague," muffled aside. "My colleague just started up the stairs after him. It was all very sudden. I thought I should..."
"Did he give a name?" I asked, walking to the window and wondering if I could break it open with a chair. I wasn't on a high floor, and it was a short jump, maybe 12 feet.
"No, he didn't, sir."
Speaking very fast.
"We couldn't, that is to say, he was very determined. He had slipped right by the desk before..."
Commotion in the hall. Some shouted Dutch.
"We're short-staffed this morning, as I'm sure you understand."
Determined pounding at the door. Coarse, nervous jolt, like the never-ending burst spraying out of Martin's forehead that sent my coffee flying. Fuck, I thought, looking at my suit and shirt. Wrecked. Couldn't they have waited until after breakfast? Then again, I thought, dabbing my shirt with a napkin, starting grimly to the door. Maybe it was Martin's guys. Maybe it would be quicker than I thought. But instead, when I threw open the door, I could scarcely believe it. There stood Boris. Rumpled. Red-eyed. Battered-looking. Snow in his hair. Snow on the shoulders of his coat. I was too startled to be relieved.
"What?"
I said as he embraced me, and then to the determined-looking clerk in the hallway striding rapidly toward us.
"No, it's okay." "You see, why should I wait? Why should I wait?"
he said angrily, flinging out an arm at the clerk, who had stopped dead to stare.
"Didn't I say? I told you I knew where his room was. How would I know, if not my friend?"
Then, to me, "I don't know why this big production. Ridiculous. I was standing there forever and no one at desk. No one. Sahara Desert." Glaring at clerk.
"Waiting, waiting," rang the bell. "Then, the second I start up, wait, wait, sir,"
whiny baby voice.
"Come back. Here he comes, chasing me."
"Thank you," I said to the clerk, or his back, rather, since after several moments of looking between us in surprise and annoyance, he had quietly turned to walk away.
"Thanks a lot. I mean it."
I called down the hall after him. It was good to know they stopped people charging upstairs on their own.
"Of course, sir,"
not bothering to look around.
"Merry Christmas." "Are you going to let me in?"
said Boris when finally the elevator doors closed and we were alone.
"Or shall we stand here tenderly and gaze?"
He smelled rank, as if he hadn't showered in days, and he looked both faintly contemptuous and very pleased with himself. My heart was pounding. I felt sick again.
"For a minute, sure."
"A minute?"
Disdainful look up and down. "You have some place to go?"
"As a matter of fact, yes."
"Potter," half humorously, putting down his bag, feeling my forehead with his knuckles.
"You look bad. You are fevered. You look like you just dug the Panama Canal."
"I feel great," I said curtly.
"You don't look great. You are white as a fish. Why are you all dressed up? Why did you not answer my calls?"
"What's this?" he said, looking past me, espying the room service table.
"Go ahead. Help yourself."
"Well, if you don't mind, I will."
"What a week. Been driving all fucking night. Shitty way to spend Christmas Eve."
Shouldering his coat off, letting it fall on the floor.
"Well, truth told, I've spent many worse. At least, no traffic on the motorway.
We stopped at some awful place on the road, only place open, petrol station, frankfurters with mustard. Usually I like them, but oh my God, my stomach.
He'd gotten an extra glass from the bar, was pouring himself some champagne.
And you, here, flicking a hand. Living it up, I see. Lap of luxury.
He'd kicked off his shoes, wiggling wet sock feet.
Christ, my toes are frozen. Very slushy on the streets. Snow is all turning to water.
Pulling up an extra chair.
Sit with me. Eat something. Very good timing.
He'd lifted the cover of the chafing dish, was sniffing the plate of truffled eggs.
Delicious. Still hot. What is this?
He said, as I reached in my coat pocket and handed him Guri's watch and ring.
Oh, yes. I forgot. Never mind about that. You can give them back yourself. No, you can do it for me. Well, we should phone him. This is feast enough for five people. Why don't we call down?
He lifted up the champagne, looked at the level as if studying a table of troubling financials.
Why don't we call for another of these, full bottle, or maybe two, and send down for more coffee or some tea maybe?
Pushing his chair in closer.
I am starving. I'll ask him.
Lifting up a piece of smoked salmon, dangling it to his mouth to gobble it before reaching in his pocket for his cell phone.
Ask him to dump the car somewhere and walk over, shall I?
Fine. Something in me had gone dead at the sight of him. Almost like with my dad when I was a kid. Long hours alone at home, the involuntary wave of relief at his key in the lock, and then the immediate heart sink at the actual sight of him.
What?
Licking his fingers noisily.
You don't want Guri to come? Who's been driving me all night? Who went without sleep? Give him some breakfast at least.
He'd already started in on the eggs.
A lot has happened. A lot has happened to me, too. Where are you going?
Order what you want.
Fishing the key card out of my pocket, handing it to him.
I'll leave the total open. Charge it to the room.
Potter.
Throwing down the napkin, starting after me, then stopping mid-step and, much to my surprise, laughing.
Go then, to your new friend or activity so important.
A lot has happened to me.
Well,
smugly,
I don't know what happened to you, but I can say that what happened to me is at least 5,000 times more. This has been some week. This has been one for the books. While you have been luxuriating in hotel,
stepping forward, hand on my sleeve,
hang on.
The phone had rung. He turned half away, spoke rapidly in Ukrainian, before breaking off and hanging up very suddenly at the sight of me heading out the door.
Potter!
Grabbing me by the shoulders, looking hard into my pupils, then turning me and steering me around, kicking the door shut behind him with one foot.
What the fuck? You are like Night of the Zombie. What was that movie we liked? The black and white, not Living Dead, but the poetry one.
I walked with a zombie. Val Luton.
That's right, that's the one. Sit down. Weed is very, very strong here, even if you are used to it. I should have warned you.
I haven't smoked any weed.
Because I tell you, when I came here first, age 20 maybe, at the time smoking trees every day, I thought I could handle anything, and, oh my God, my own fault. I was an ass with the guy at the coffee shop. Give me strongest you have. Well, he did. Three hits and I couldn't walk. I couldn't stand. It was like I forgot to move my feet. Tunnel vision. No control of muscles. Total disconnection from reality.
He had steered me to the bed. He was sitting beside me with his arm around my shoulders.
And, I mean, you know me, but never. Fast, pounding heart, like running and running and whole time sitting still. No comprehension of my locale. Terrible darkness. All alone and crying a little, you know? Speaking to God in my mind. What did I do? Why do I deserve this? Don't remember leaving the place. Like a horrible dream. And this is weed, mind you. Weed! came to on the street, all jelly legs, clutching onto a bike rack near Dam Square. I thought traffic was driving up on the sidewalk and going to wreck into me. Finally found my way to my girl's flat in the Jordan, and laid around for a long time in a bath with no water in it. So,
he was looking suspiciously at my coffee-splattered shirt front.
I didn't smoke any weed. I know, you said, was just telling you a story. Thought it was a little interesting to you, maybe. Well, no shame, he said. Whatever.
The ensuing silence was endless.
I forgot to say,
he was pouring me a glass of mineral water.
After this time I told you, wandering on the dam, I felt wrong for 3 days after. My girl said, let's go out, Boris, you can't lie here anymore and waste the whole weekend. Vomited in the Van Gogh Museum. Nice and classy.
The cold water, hitting my sore throat, threw me into goosebumps and into a visceral bodily memory from boyhood. Painful desert sunlight. Painful afternoon hangover. Teeth chattering in the air-conditioned chill. Boris and I so sick we kept literally retching and laughing about retching, which made us retch even harder, gagging on stale crackers from a box in my room.
Well,
Boris stealing a glance at me sideways,
something going around, maybe. If was not Christmas Day, I would run down and get something to help your stomach. Here, here,
dumping some food on a plate, shoving it at me. He picked up the champagne bottle from the ice bucket, looked at the level again, then poured the remainder of the split into my half-empty orange juice glass. Half-empty, because he had drunk it himself.
Here,
he said, raising his champagne glass to me.
Merry Christmas to you. Long life to us both. Christ is born. Let us glorify him. Now,
gulping it down, he turned the rolls on the tablecloth, was heaping out food to himself in the ceramic bread dish.
I am sorry. I know you want to hear about everything, but I am hungry and must eat first.
Pâté, caviar, Christmas bread. Despite everything, I was hungry too, and I decided to be grateful for the moment and for the food in front of me, and began to eat, and for a while neither of us said anything.
Better?
He said presently, throwing me a glance.
You are exhausted.
Helping himself to more salmon.
There is a bad flu going round. Shirley has it too.
I said nothing. I had only just begun to adjust myself to the fact that he was in the room with me.
I thought you were out with some girl. Well, here is where Gyuri and I have been,
he said when I didn't answer.
We have been in Frankfurt.
Well, this you know.
Some crazy time it's been, but...
Downing his champagne, walking to the minibar and squatting down to look inside.
Do you have my passport? Yes, I have your passport. Wow, there is some nice wine in here, and all these nice baby absolutes.
Where is it? Loping back to the table with a bottle of red wine under his arm, and three minibar bottles of vodka which he stuck in the ice bucket.
Here you go.
Fishing it from his pocket, tossing it carelessly onto the table.
Now,
sitting down,
shall we drink a toast together?
I sat on the edge of the bed without moving, my half-eaten plate of food still in my lap.
My passport.
In the long silence that followed, Boris reached across the table and flicked the edge of my champagne glass with middle finger, sharp, crystalline ting like a spoon on an after-dinner goblet.
May I have your attention, please?
He inquired ironically.
What? Toast?
Tipping his glass to me. I rubbed my hand over my forehead.
And you are... what? Here? Huh? Toasting what, exactly? Christmas Day? Graciousness of God? Will that do?
The silence between us, while not exactly hostile, took on, as it grew, a distinctly glaring and unmanageable tone. Finally, Boris fell back in his chair and nodded at my glass and said,
Hate to keep asking, but when you are through with staring at me, do you think we can...
I'm going to have to figure all this out at some point.
What?
I guess I'll have to sort this all out in my mind sometime. It's going to be a job. Like, this thing over there, that over here. Two different piles. Three different piles, maybe.
Potter, Potter, Potter.
Affectionate, half-scornful, leaning forward.
You are a blockhead. You have no sense of gratitude or beauty.
No sense of gratitude. I'll drink to that, I guess.
What? Don't you remember our happy Christmas that one time? Happy days gone by, never to return? Your dad.
Grand flinging gesture.
At the restaurant table? Our feast and joy? Our happy celebration? Don't you honor that memory in your heart?
For God's sake. Potter. Arrested breath.
You are something. You are worse than a woman. Hurry, hurry, get up, go. Didn't you read my texts?
What? Boris, reaching for his glass, stopped cold. Quickly he glanced at the floor, and I was, suddenly, very aware of the bag by his chair. In amusement, Boris stuck his thumbnail between his front teeth.
Go ahead.
The words hovered over the wrecked breakfast, distorted reflections in the domed cover of the silver dish. I picked up the bag and stood, and his smile faded when I started to the door.
Wait,
he said.
Wait, what? You're not going to open it?
Look, I knew myself too well, didn't trust myself to wait. I wasn't letting the same thing happen twice.
What are you doing? Where are you going?
I'm taking this downstairs, so they can lock it in the safe. I didn't even know if there was a safe, only that I didn't want the painting near me. It was safer with strangers in a cloakroom anywhere. I was also going to phone the police the moment Boris left, but not until. There was no reason dragging Boris into it.
You didn't even open it. You don't even know what it is.
Duly noted.
What the hell is that supposed to mean? Maybe I don't need to know what it is. Oh, no. Maybe you do.
It's not what you think, he added, a bit smugly.
No?
No.
How do you know what I think? Of course I know what you think it is, and you are wrong. Sorry, but,
raising his hands,
is something much, much better than.
Better than?
Yes.
How can it be better than?
It just is. Lots, lots better. You will just have to believe me on this. Open and see,
he said with a curt nod.
What is this?
I said after about 30 stunned seconds, lifting out one brick of hundreds, dollars, then another.
That is not all of it,
rubbing the back of his head with the flat of his hand.
Fraction of.
I looked at it, then at him.
Fraction of what?
Well, smirking.
Thought more dramatic if in cash, no?
Muffled comedy voices floating from next door, articulated cadences of a television laugh track.
Nicer surprise for you. That is not all of it, mind you. U.S. currency, I thought, more convenient for you to return with. What you came over with. A bit more. In fact, they have not paid yet. No money has yet come through, but soon, I hope.
They?
Who hasn't paid? Paid what? This money is mine, on personal, from the house safe. Stopped in Antwerp to get it. Nicer this way. Nicer for you to open, no? Christmas morning, ho ho ho. But you have a lot more coming.
I turned the stack of money over and looked at it, forward and back, banded, straight from Citibank.
Thank you, Boris. Oh, no problem,
he answered, ironically, in his own voice.
Glad to do it.
Money in stacks. Outside the event. Crisp in the hand. There was some kind of obvious content or emotion to the whole thing I wasn't getting.
As I say, fraction of 2 million euro. In dollars, much, much more. So, Merry Christmas, my gift to you. I can open you an account in Switzerland for the rest of it and give you a bank book, and that way...
What? He said, recoiling almost, when I put the stack of bills back in the bag, snapped it shut, and shoved it back at him.
No, it's yours.
I don't want it.
I don't think you understand. Let me explain, please.
I said I don't want it.
Potter.
Folding his arms and looking at me coldly, the same look he'd given me in the Pollock bar.
A different man would walk out laughing now and never come back.
Then why don't you?
I,
looking around the room, as if at a loss for a reason why.
I will tell you why not. For old time's sake,
even though you treat me like a criminal,
and because I want to make things up to you.
Make what up?
Sorry?
What exactly?
Will you explain it to me? Where the hell did this money come from? How does this fix a fucking thing?
Well, actually, you should not be so quick to jump to-
I don't care about the money!
I was half screaming.
I care about the painting! Where's the painting?
If you would just wait a second and not fly off the-
What's this money for? Where's it from? From what source, exactly? Bill Gates? Santa Claus? The Tooth Fairy?
Please. You are like your dad with the drama.
Where is it? What'd you do with it? It's gone, isn't it? Traded? Sold?
No, of course,
Hey!
Scraping his chair back hastily.
Jesus, Potter, calm down! Of course I didn't sell it. Why would I do any such?
I don't know. How should I know? What was all this for? What was the point of any of this? Why did I even come here with you? Why'd you have to drag me into it? You thought you'd bring me over here to help you kill people? Is that it?
I've never killed anybody in my life, said Boris haughtily.
Oh, God. Did you just say that? Am I supposed to laugh? Did I really just hear you say you never...
That was self-defense. You know it. I do not go around hurting people for the fun of it, but I will protect myself if I have to.
And you, he said, talking imperiously over me.
With Martin. Apart from the fact I would not be here now, and most likely you neither.
Will you do me a favor? If you won't shut up, will you maybe go over there and stand for a minute? Because I really don't want to see you or look at you now.
With Martin, the police, if they knew, they would give you a medal, and so would many others, innocent, not now living, thanks to him. Martin was,
or actually, you could leave. That's probably better.
Martin was a devil, not all human. Not all his fault. He was born that way. No feelings, you know. I have known Martin to do much worse things to people than shooting them. Not to us,
he said hastily, waving his hand, as if this were the point of all misunderstanding. Us, he would have shot out of courtesy, and none of his other badness and evil.
But was Martin a good man? A proper human being? No, he was not. Fritz was no flower either, so this remorse and pain of yours, you must view it in a different light. You must view it as heroism in service of higher good. You cannot always take such a dark perspective of life all the time, you know? It is very bad for you.
Can I ask you just one thing?
Anything.
Where's the painting?
Look,
Boris sighed and looked away.
This was the best I could do. I know how much you wanted it. I did not think you would be quite so upset not to have it.
Can you just tell me where it is?
Potter,
hand on heart.
I'm sorry you're so angry. I was not expecting this. But you said you weren't going to keep it anyway. You were going to give it back. Isn't that what you said?
When I kept on staring at him.
How the hell is this the right thing? Well, I'll tell you, if you would shut up and let me talk. Instead of ranting back and forth and frothing at mouth and spoiling our Christmas.
What are you talking about?
Idiot,
rapping his temple with his knuckles.
Where do you think this money came from?
How the fuck should I know?
This is the reward money.
Reward?
Yes, for safe return of.
It took a moment. I was standing. I had to sit down.
Are you angry?
Said Boris carefully. Voices in the hallway. Dull winter light glinting off the brass lampshade.
I thought you would be pleased.
No? But I had not recovered sufficiently to speak. All I could do was stare, in dumbfoundment. At my expression, Boris shook the hair out of his face and laughed.
You gave me the idea yourself. I don't think you knew how great it was. Genius!
I wish I had thought of it myself. Call the art cops. Call the art cops.
Well, crazy.
So I thought at the time. You're a bit nuts on this subject, to be perfectly honest.
Only then,
he shrugged,
unfortunate events took course, as you only too well know. And after we parted on the bridge, I spoke to Cherry. What to do, wringing our hands a bit. And we did a little nosing around and,
lifting his glass to me,
well, in fact, a genius idea.
Why should I doubt you, ever? You are the brains of all this from the start.
While I am in Alaska, walking 5 miles to petrol station to steal a Nestle bar, well, look at you.
Mastermind. Why should I ever doubt you? Because
I look into it and,
throwing up his arms,
you were right. Who would have thought?
Over $1 million for your picture out there in reward money.
Not even picture.
Information leading to recovery of picture. No questions asked. Cash. Free and clear.
Outside, snow was flying against the window. Next door, someone was coughing hard, or laughing hard. I couldn't tell which.
Back and forth, all these years. A game for suckers. Inconvenient, dangerous. And question I am asking myself now. Why did I even bother? With all this legal money straight up for the claiming.
Because, you were right, straight business thing for them. No questions asked whatever.
All they cared about was getting the picture back.
Boris lit a cigarette and dropped the match with a hiss in his water glass.
I did not see it myself. I wish I had. Did not think a good idea to stick around, if you get me.
German SWAT team. Vests, guns. Drop everything. Lie down. Great commotion and crowd in the street. Ah, I would have loved to see the look on Sasha's face.
You phoned the cops?
Well, not me personally.
My boy Dima. Dima is furious at the Germans because of the shooting in his garage. Completely unnecessary and a big headache for him. See?
Restlessly, he crossed his legs. Blew out a big cloud of smoke.
I had an idea where they had the picture. There's an apartment in Frankfurt. Used to belong to an old girlfriend of Sasha's. People keep stuff there. But no way in hell could I get in, even with half a dozen guys. Keys, alarms, cameras, passcode.
Only problem.
Yawning, wiping his mouth with the back of his hand.
Well, two problems.
First one is that police need probable cause to search the apartment. You cannot just call with name of thief, anonymous citizen being helpful, if you know what I mean. And second problem, I could not remember the exact address of the place. Very, very secretive. I have only been there once, late at night, and not in best of condition. Knew roughly the neighborhood. Used to be squats, now is very nice. Had Guri drive me up the streets and down, up the streets and down. Took for fucking ever. Finally, I had it pinned to a row of houses, but was not 100% sure which. So I got out and walked it. Scared as I was, to be on that street, afraid to be seen, I got out of the car and walked it. With my own 2 feet. Eyes closed halfway. Hypnotized myself a bit. You know, trying to remember number of steps. Trying to feel it in my body. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Dima.
He was picking assiduously through the breads on the tablecloth.
Dima's cousin's sister-in-law,
ex-sister-in-law, actually, married a Dutchman. And they have a son named Anton. 21, maybe 22. Squeaky clean. Surname Vandenbrink. Anton is Dutch citizen, and has grown up speaking Dutch, so this is helpful for us too, if you get me. Anton,
nibbling on a roll, making a face, spitting a rye seed from between his teeth,
Anton works in a bar where many rich people go, off C. Hofstraat, fancy Amsterdam, Gucci Street, Cartier Street, good kid, speaks English, Dutch, only two words maybe of Russian. Anyway, Dima had Anton phone the police and report that he had seen two Germans, one of which answers to precise description of Sasha. Granny glasses, little house on the prairie shirt, tribal tattoo on his hand which Anton is able to draw exactly from photograph we supplied. Anyway, Anton telephoned the art police and told them he had seen these Germans drunk as gods in his bar, arguing. And they are so angry and upset that they had left behind, what? A folder. Well, of course, it is a doctored folder. We were going to do a phone, a doctored phone, but none of us were nerd enough to be sure we did it totally untraceable. So, I printed out some photos. Photo I showed you, plus some others that I happen to have on my phone. Finch, along with relatively recent issue of newspaper, to date it, you know. 2 years old newspaper, but no matter. Anton just happened to find this folder, see? Under a chair, with some other documents from the Miami thing, you know, to connect to prior sighting. Frankfurt address conveniently inserted, as well as Sasha's name. All this is Miriam's idea. She deserves the credit. You should buy Miriam big drink when you get back home. FedExed some things from America. Very, very convincing. It has Sasha's name. It has... Sasha's in jail? Indeed he is, Boris cackled. We get the ransom. Museum gets the painting. Cops get to close the case. Insurance company gets its money back. Public is edified. Everyone wins. Ransom? Well, rewards, ransom, whatever you want to call it. Who paid this money out? I don't know. Boris made an irritated gesture. Museum, government, private citizen, does it matter? It matters to me. Well, it shouldn't. You should shut up and be grateful, because, he said, lifting his chin, speaking over me, you know what, Theo? Know what? Guess. Guess how lucky we were. Not only do they have your bird in there, but, who would have guessed it, many other stolen pictures. What? 2 dozens or more, missing for many years, some of them. And not all of them are as lovely or beautiful as yours. In fact, most of them are not. This is my own personal opinion. But there are big rewards out on 4 or 5 of them all the same, bigger than yours. And even some of the not-so-famous ones. Dead duck. Boring picture of fat-faced man you don't know. Even these have smaller rewards. 50,000, 100,000 here and there. Who would think? Information leading to recovery of. It adds up. And I hope, he added, with some austerity, that maybe you can forgive me for that. What? Because, they are saying, one of great art recoveries of history. And this is the part I hoped would please you. Maybe not, who knows, but I hoped. Museum masterworks returned to public ownership. Stewardship of cultural treasure. Great joy. All the angels are singing. But it would never have happened if not for you. I sat in silent amazement. Of course, Boris added, nodding at the bag open on the bed. This is not all of it. Nice Christmas present in it for Miriam and Cherry and Gyuri. And I gave Anton and Dima a 30% cut right off the top. 15% each. Anton did all the work, really. So in my opinion, he should have got 20 and Dima 10. But this is a lot of money for Anton, so he is happy.
Other paintings they recovered? Not just mine?
Yes. Did you not just hear me say...
What other paintings?
Oh, some very celebrated and famous ones missing for years.
Such as?
Boris made an irritated sound.
Oh, I do not know the names, you know not to ask me that. Few modern things. Very important and expensive. Everyone very excited, although I will be frank. I do not understand why the big deal on some of them. Why does it cost so much? A thing like from kindergarten class. Ugly blob. Black stick with tangles. But then, too, multiple works of historic greatness. One was a Rembrandt.
Not a seascape?
No. People in a dark room. Little bit boring. Nice Van Gogh, though, of a seashore. And then, oh, I don't know, usual thing, Mary, Jesus, many angels. Some sculptures, even. And Asian artworks, too. They look to me worth nothing, but I guess they were a lot.
Boris stabbed out his cigarette vigorously. Which reminds me, he got away.
Who?
Sasha's China boy.
He had gone back to the minibar, returned with corkscrew and two glasses.
He was not at the apartment when the cops came, lucky for him. And if he is smart, which he is, he will not be coming back.
Holding up crossed fingers.
He will find some other rich man to live off of. That is what he does. Good work if you can get it. Anyway, biting his lip as he pulled out the cork, pop. I wish I had thought of it myself. Years ago. One big easy check. Legal tender. Instead of this follow the bouncing ball so many years. Back and forth.
Wagging the corkscrew.
Tick, tock. Back and forth. Nerve-wracking. All this time. All this headache. And all this easy government money right under my nose. I will tell you.
Crossing over, pouring me out a noisy glug of red.
In some ways, Horst is probably just as glad it fell out like this as you. He likes to make a dollar same as anyone, but he also has guilt. Same ideas of public good, cultural patrimony, blah, blah, blah.
I don't understand how Horst fits into this.
No, nor do I. And we will never know, said Boris firmly. It's all very careful and polite. And yes, yes,
impatiently, taking a quick sneaky gulp of his wine.
And yes, I am angry at Horst a bit. Maybe I don't trust him so much as formerly. Maybe, in fact, I don't trust him so much at all. But Horst is saying he wouldn't have sent Martin if he knew it was us. And maybe he's telling the truth. Never, Boris. I would never. Who can know? To be quite honest, just between us, I think he may be saying it only to save face. Because once it fell to pieces with Martin and Fritz, what else could he do, except gracefully back away?
Claim no knowledge?
I do not know this for a fact, mind you, he said. This is just my theory. Horst has his own story.
Which is?
Horst is saying, Boris sighed, Horst says he didn't know that Sasha took the picture. Not until we snatched it ourselves, and Sasha phoned from Clear Blue Sky asking Horst's help to get it back. Pure coincidence that Martin was in town, here from L.A. for the holidays. For druggies, Amsterdam is fairly popular Christmas spot, and yes, that part,
he rubbed his eye.
Well, I am pretty sure Horst is telling the truth. That call from Sasha was a surprise. Throwing himself on Horst's mercy. No time to talk. Had to act quick. How was Horst to know it was us? Sasha wasn't even in Amsterdam. He was hearing it all at second hand from Chinky, whose German is not that great. Horst was hearing it at third. It all lines up if you look at it the right way. That said,
he shrugged.
What? Well,
Horst definitely didn't know the painting was in Amsterdam, nor that Sasha was trying to get a loan on it. Not until Sasha panicked and called him when we took it. Of that, I am confident.